The opinions expressed on The Rob Report are the opinions of the host, participating callers and or listener emails, texts and or letters, and are not necessarily the opinions of WDAY or Forum Communications.
Good afternoon, Rob Report 970, WDAY AM 93.1 FM, here to guide you through your afternoon. We got a couple of guests coming up in the second hour. Justin Luke Riley from the Marijuana Accountability Coalition. The debate over Measure 3 continues. We'll talk with him about that coming up at 1. Also, want to talk about the midterms a little bit. Mark Lauder, former Trump advisor, is going to be calling in at 1:30. We'll talk with him as well. But until then, it's open phones. And you know what? We gotta talk about this birthright citizenship issue and Trump. I guess not announcing. From the way I understand it, his administration has been kicking this around. And then the press learned about it. So he was doing an interview with the folks at Axios, and they asked about it. And so he came out and said, it's something I'm considering. We ought to do it. We ought to get rid of birthright citizenship, and I'm thinking about issuing an executive order. Although I guess the executive order probably won't come till after the midterms, which is maybe not surprising at this point in the game, given that the midterms the election's next week. But my question in this first hour is, what do you think of this proposal? What do you think of this idea? Was the president, is he right? I mean, what do you think about birthright citizenship? I mean, there's a lot of questions to ask here. Can the president do this with an executive order? I think it's pretty clear he can. We're talking about the Constitution here. I mean, the 14th Amendment says what it says, and it's been enforced the way it's been enforced since the 19th century. So I guess that's the first question. Can he do it? Should he do it? Should the way we do birthright citizenship in this country today, should it continue? Love to hear from you. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. But before we get to any of that, Bob calls in, says he wants to share a story of what he claims was a nasty call from the Hike Camp campaign. Bob, what's going on?
All right. This happened yesterday. It didn't start out nasty, but I had just got home from picking up my wife's ashes. She died on Wednesday.
I got a call from a guy
for the Hike Camp campaign.
Okay.
I told him I didn't want to talk politics right now. Would he please hang up? He started getting an attitude in his voice, and he said, well, are you going to vote? And I said, listen, I just don't want to talk right now. Will you just please? I should have hung up, but I thought he called me, he should hang up. And he just said, well, what, are you going to vote? And then I said, then it started getting ugly, and I started it, I'll admit it. But I said, listen, and I used the D word, and I don't mean Democrat. I says, hang up the D phone. I do not want to talk to you right now.
Oh, that D word.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I said,
I was thinking of a different one.
Yeah.
I had another one in my head, too.
Look, just hang up the phone and leave me be. And he demands, are you going to vote? And I says, look, I just got done. My wife died on Wednesday. I don't want to talk politics with you. I don't care what campaign you're from. And again, he gives me the most insincere, I'm sorry for your loss I've ever heard. And he goes, well, are you going to vote? Well, I'm afraid I blew it. I started cussing him and telling him to hang up, shut up, and hang up the phone. He just kept telling me, well, are you going to vote? And then I really went into a tirade on him. And he started to say, are you? And that's as far as he got. And I cussed him out with everything I had. And this went on for I don't know how much longer till he finally hung up.
Yeah.
And I'm an independent. I'm not a fan of Kramer, but I don't like the way this Heidi campaign has been going without talking to people and blah, 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 blah. But I just say one thing. I will thank the man for something. I have now decided who I'm going to vote for.
Hmm.
And, you know, I might not even go vote if it wasn't for Measure 1 and 3, which I really want to vote on.
Okay.
But I just had to tell somebody about this. That was just unbelievable to me.
Well, I appreciate your feedback. This is the first I've heard of anything. I've had some people complaining to me about text messages they've been getting, and they don't really like being texted by some of the campaigns, both Republicans and Democrats, I should add. This is the first I've heard of anybody who's had a bad experience with somebody calling. I mean, most of the time people are saying they're getting called and they're getting asked questions. And a lot of times the people, like, they ask about voter registration a lot, which obviously North Dakota doesn't have. And
yeah,
that kind of makes you wonder, you know, how much do these people really know about our state? So, I mean, I've had some stuff, but this is the first time I've heard about something like this, Bob.
Well,
I'm very sorry.
I said I didn't want to talk. He pegged me for a Republican. I'm not a Republican or a Democrat.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is related, but I've been getting those calls, and I think they're robocalls or something. I got three more of them after this happened, and instead of the machine saying anything, I even answered the call, and all I got was dead air. Now, I'm not accusing nobody of nothing, but that just got me, too.
Yeah.
And usually with these robocalls, I just, you know the trick where you don't say anything?
Yeah.
And the machine will give up and hang up. They wouldn't hang up, and when I asked who it was, they wouldn't answer.
Yeah. Well, Bob, I'm sorry. First of all, I'm sorry for your loss with your
wife. Yeah, I can hear that you're sincere when you say it, unlike that other fella.
Well, you know, and I'm sorry. I think thanks for the call, Bob. I appreciate it. If anybody else has had this sort of experience, I guess I'd love to hear about it. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk@wday.com. Like I said, I've had some people who are, you know, they don't like some of the texts they got. Although that's not unusual, I got to say, Mike, at this point in the election cycle, I think people are just a little fed up with the campaigns in general. I think we're all tired of hearing about it. I mean, I make my living from this stuff. Right. I love a good campaign, and I've loved the 2018 election cycle. But I think we get to this point and we're days away and our inboxes are filled up, and a lot of it's just kind of desperate rhetoric and, you know, last grasps. And I think everybody's just a little tired of it at this point.
I do wonder who out there is truly undecided, like who is being reached at this point, who hasn't made up their mind on these issues, on the candidates. And again, there's a lot of people because of a thing like Measure 3 that I'm sure they're going in really only knowing about that one issue, and everything else on the ballot is probably something they don't maybe know anything about. When you have a measure like that, where there's a special interest, like the legalization of marijuana, you might have people that they're into that, but they're not really into politics in general and probably don't know a lot about the rest of the issues.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. I by the way, I will tell you, for those sorts of people, remember, you can leave parts of your ballot blank. It will still count. And I would advise, my advice to people is, and Mike, you and I have talked about this before, if you don't know who you're voting for, right, if you come across a race and it's just like, I don't know anything about these people, don't vote. That's okay. You know, I would rather you not, and by the way, if you feel like you are informed, then please vote. I'm not trying to suppress your vote or encourage you not to vote. If you feel like you have strongly held convictions about a race, please do vote. I'm just saying that if you come across a ballot and an election on the ballot, and you don't know anything about the race or the issue or the person or whatever, it's okay to not vote. And I would recommend not voting. Please don't like vote randomly. Or vote because you like the one person's name or the other over the other person's name or something silly like that, and cancel out somebody else's well-considered vote. Please don't do that. So you are allowed to do that. But just in terms of the campaigns, like reaching out and you talk, like there was the big thing where Senator Heitkamp got this huge influx of cash at the last minute, you know, and people are talking about, well, she's going to run more TV ads and more radio ads and more digital ads and hire more volunteers and do more phone banking and more canvassing. And while I think that stuff does work and I think it does move the needle, I also think there's a point of diminishing returns. I mean, there's going to come a point where people are just tired of getting contacted about these campaigns. You know, so there's an upper limit to how much good money can do in these campaigns as well. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk@wday.com. Caller, Ken, you're on. What's up?
Hey, a couple things. Just on my way into work this morning, standing on the corner of University Drive and 12th Avenue North, the guy with the sign, the bottom part said Kevin Cramer, and the top one said vote yes on Measure 3.
Yeah. I've been saying that for a while. A lot of people, I hear some people saying, well, the Measure 3, the people that Measure 3 draws out, that's going to be good for Heitkamp because they're going to be liberal voters. I don't think that voting block's going to be as liberal as a lot of people think.
I think that you can have an independent mind on that. There's, a lot of libertarian crossover.
I'm telling you right now, I am
a person standing on the corner.
I am a Republican who supports. I am a Republican who supports Measure 3.
Yeah. So and the How's other that? Thing is, I was having a conversation after church with a gentleman who was, because he bought a condo and was getting some insurance, was talking to an insurance agent who happened to be in Colorado, and the marijuana thing came up in his conversation with her. And she said that when Colorado went with recreational marijuana, that the insurance industry for cars rates went up because risk went up. I don't have, it makes some common sense. I don't have any data to back it up. But certainly I wonder if that question's been asked about what the insurance industry's reaction to Measure 3 might be.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's right. There's a lot of claims being made about other states that have there's a lot of claims that have been made about Colorado. I don't know if that's true or not about insurance rates going up. That's a fair question to ask. I don't know that anybody's asked that question. Mike, have you heard anything about that here in North Dakota?
I haven't anybody really talk about it, no. I'm sure it's been discussed somewhere.
That's why, like I said, it came up, and I just had never even thought of that. It makes some linear sense. I mean, it might be a question that would be able to be answered with a call to someone in insurance. I actually called my insurance guy to ask the question, but being that it was a theoretical thing here in North Dakota, he got out his 10-foot pole after talking to me for about 30 seconds. He really didn't want to comment on it. He said, I don't know. He just said, I don't know what would or wouldn't happen in North Dakota.
Yeah. Ken, thanks for the call. Here's something. I just read the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety says collision claim. This was a study released earlier this year. Says collision claim frequency in Colorado, Washington, and Oregon rose by 3%. They say that recreational cannabis is the main culprit behind the increase. Although the American Journal of Public Health, on the other hand, found no increase in fatality or crash rates in Colorado and Washington.
Well, I would say this, Rob. Do you suppose the insurance industry would use any possible excuse to raise rates? Do you think that maybe they would do that in this case? Let me think about it.
Well, yes. the thing about the auto industry is it's not like health insurance. It's a highly competitive marketplace. It's not that hard to switch from like Geico to Progressive, unlike health insurance, where most of us are locked into an employer-based plan or locked into like a government plan, something like that. It's a very competitive marketplace. So I think it's harder to get away with that sort of thing in the auto insurance market than it would be, say, in health insurance. I don't know that there's a clear, we do have a guest on who's anti-Measure 3 later in the program. He's with the Marijuana Accountability Coalition. Maybe we can ask him. Although maybe his answer won't be straight or unbiased, I guess. But I don't know. I don't know that there's a clear answer from Colorado. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Karen, hold through the break. We'll get to you right after. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDY.com. Don't go away. Welcome back. Rob Port, 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM. So, Mike, during the break, the question about – because I do think that's a fair question.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what impact would legalized recreational marijuana have on car insurance rates? Here's a quote. This is from an article at the Denver Post. It says, I quote, "In every state where recreational marijuana has been legalized, with the exception of Massachusetts, car insurance rates have increased. Between 2016 and 2017, premiums rose an average of 3.2% in states where recreational marijuana was legal, but only 1.6% on average in states with a full ban in place." So there you go. I guess the auto insurance rates growing about twice as fast.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still
color me
relatively
shocked on
small.
That one, Rob.
What's that?
I said color me shocked on that one,
I
Rob.
I feel like you're being a little facetious right there, Mike.
That's kind of like Rob when when we got out of the Iranian deal, the price of oil goes up immediately. For what reason? But then when things are good, the price doesn't come down so fast. It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, well, those markets are complex. I'm not sure that's a one-to-one comparison. Also, but I mean, I think it's also fair. I mean, marijuana is an inebriant. A 3.2% increase is still, even though that's double the national rate,
mm-hmm.
car insurance premiums don't grow fast because, again, it's a very competitive marketplace. A 3.2% increase, still not that much. And when you consider the fact that, A, we're still in the early running with legalized recreational marijuana, and, B, it is an inebriant. I mean, I think the one thing that even people who want to, like me, who want to legalize recreational marijuana have to acknowledge is that there's going to be some turbulence when you're transitioning from something like marijuana being prohibited to it being legal, right? I mean, there's going to be some turbulence as our society figures out how are we going to deal with this, because you can abuse it. You can use marijuana
Absolutely.
Irresponsibly.
Yeah.
So there's going to be, I think tempering that, though, is the fact that eventually the turbulence is going to go away and marijuana is just going to be a part of our society. There will eventually come a generation of Americans who didn't know any other way than marijuana being legal. I think that's where we're heading. In the meantime, though, when we legalized alcohol again, right, when we went from prohibition to bringing alcohol back to be legal again, that was tough. And that was, alcohol was something that obviously had a legal industry behind it prior to prohibition. So, of course, there's going to be some turbulence. Faster-growing car insurance rates, while not great, going from 1.6 to 3.2%, maybe not the worst thing in the world. I don't know. That's me. Let's see. Caller, Karen, you're on. What's up?
Yeah, I don't use the internet, so there are some categories of people that I leave.
How are you living in 2018 without using the internet?
I donate magazines to a nursing home, and I spend a large amount of time sorting through those magazines coming in the mail to decide if I want to give them there or to Family Health Care Center.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Karen. Appreciate it. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. I didn't intend to spend this first segment talking about the Senate race or Measure 3, Mike, but I guess that's just where we went. Thanks to that caller. I do think it's interesting, and we're going to continue the discussion about Measure 3 coming up here at 1 o'clock. Justin Luke Riley, who is with the Marijuana Accountability Coalition out of Colorado, we'll talk with him about that. But in the meantime, I do want to see how people feel, because I have some thoughts about this 14th Amendment question with President Trump. And again, it's important to remember, this is not something Trump himself announced. He has said that his administration had plans for this, but he was asked about it in an interview. And I think actually acknowledged, like, hey, how'd you guys know about that? Because somebody got wind that it was being kicked around in the Trump administration. But what do you think? And I think there's a number of questions to ask here. Can Trump, with an executive order, stop birthright citizenship for the children of illegal immigrants? I mean, that's obviously what he's aiming. We don't have an executive order that he's proposed or anything, but that's obviously what he's aiming at. Can he do it? Would that even be constitutional? And then the other question is, should he do it? Should that even be something that we should do in this country? Love to hear from you. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. So we've been wanting to talk about President Trump and the 14th Amendment executive order and birthright citizenship, and I got some emails and stuff on that, but starting off the show, we got a call from somebody who said they had a bad experience with, I don't know what you call it, like a canvasser or a telemarketer, somebody calling on behalf of the Democrats and or the Heidi Heitkamp campaign. Said his wife just died, and according to him, you know, the caller was rude to him, and anyway, it was a bad experience. We got another caller, Mike, says he's got a similar experience. And by the way, if you've had an experience like this, I'm all ears. This is the first time hearing about this. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDY.com. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, actually, it was a friend of mine who had a bad experience. She basically, this lady was calling, just want to talk about, you know, supporting Heidi Heitkamp, women's rights and all that, and my friend didn't want to hear any of it. Then she got aggressive and she got rude to her, like, well, don't, how come you don't support women's rights? And she wanted to talk about it and eventually hung up on it. But I've just, you know, is it possible that, it sounds like a couple of friends had this experience, is it possible that this might be happening a lot more than we think with the Hike Camp campaign? Because it might match your MO with the way they treat, like, for example, the media, or when the media is critical of her, their staff is known to kind of go after people, aren't they?
Well, their staff does that. When you are critical of Senator Heitkamp, they absolutely come out. And I can tell you, I mean, I've been the target of that.
Right.
They come after you, and it's ugly, man. They do not.
Right.
They do not. You, if you are a critic of them in the press, you know, the nicest thing that they will do is they'll freeze you out, which obviously
right,
they do to me,
yeah,
except for when Senator Heitkamp needs to apologize for something, I guess.
Right. I think this whole, you know, the whole North Dakota nice image that campaign has, you know, even going looking at their advertising with the font, you know, Heidi and the smile, and it's a facade. It just doesn't add up to what North Dakota's supposed to be about, you know.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I don't know about these calls. I mean, this is the first time I'm hearing about these calls, and I have a hard time saying that the calls that, I mean, maybe the campaign just hired a bad call center or something. I don't know. I have a hard time necessarily connecting that to the campaign. I do think the point you're making, because it is interesting. I mean, a lot of people talk. I mean, even Kevin Cramer mentions in his ads, everybody likes Heidi, right? That is her perception, right? And I think she works very, very hard to cultivate it as being this, you know, very gregarious, very nice person. She does a good job of it. I agree with you. I'm not sure how accurate it is based on the way her campaign treats people. I always think it's interesting that Senator Heitkamp gets such a pass for the things that her brother does on the radio, right? Because I think it's a 1-2 punch. I don't think there's any question that her brother is they try to pretend like it's not so. But there's no question her brother is basically a campaign surrogate for her. And
right,
I think when there's dirty work to do, when it's time to attack somebody like me, you know, her brother will spend an hour talking about my divorce on air, right? I mean, when it's time to get nasty with somebody who's a problem for them, they send out Joel to do the dirty work, and then Heidi gets to sort of float above it all. I've never understood why she gets a pass for that. I feel like if Kevin Cramer had a sibling who was on the radio, you know, attacking all his political enemies, he would be held accountable for that, right? I mean, especially stuff. I mean, Joel Heitkamp was just on MSNBC. I mean, he talks about how he's not a part of the campaign, but he was just on MSNBC this morning. I saw bragging about how he's got access to like internal polling numbers from the campaign. Okay, well, which is it? Are you a part of the campaign or are you not? Because whenever he says something that's inconvenient for the campaign, then he's not a part of the campaign. But when he's out there trying to help and he's being a surrogate, now he's part of the campaign. You can't have it both ways. And I think it's been interesting how the Heitkamp's going to pass on that. Does that make sense, Mike? All right. Thanks for the call, Mike. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. So I don't know. Mike, I'm hesitant, and I'm not hesitant at all about criticizing Senator Heitkamp when I think she's wrong. I'm hesitant to blame them for what sounds like maybe if these two reports that we've gotten this show, if they're accurate, I'm hesitant to blame them for what might be just a bad hire at a call center.
Well, and plus, what does one person consider rude versus not rude?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody has a different bar for that.
Yeah, and our first caller, I mean, geez, his wife just died. He's going through a rough time.
Yeah, and you're going to be very sensitive to things in all aspects of your life in a terrible time like that, absolutely.
I've snapped at people, too, when they caught me on a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
It happens.
No.
Yeah.
You have bad days?
Every once in a while.
I've never dealt with you having a bad day.
For all I'm cast as this right-wing ogre,
mm-hmm.
I am a veritable ray of sunshine. I feel like
you're a lovable little fuzzball.
Oh, yeah, that's all right. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. All right, to this 14th Amendment question birthright citizenship question. Brad emails. He goes, Rob, I think it would be a huge mistake. If the president would pull something like that off, the entire Constitution would be at risk. I think Brad's right. Constitution says what it says. 14th Amendment was ratified in the 19th century, and it's been enforced as granting birthright citizenship even to people who are in that since it was ratified. So I mean, to me, here's where a lot of people get hung up, right? On this text from the 14th Amendment, Section 1, it says, I quote, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, that clause is important, are citizens of the United States and the state wherein they reside, right? That's the 14th Amendment. Now, where a lot of people get hung up is they say, well, illegal immigrants are not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. Therefore, the 14th Amendment does not convey upon them citizenship. That's the argument. And it's wrong. The way and the reason why it's wrong, if the way people are interpreting that clause is accurate, that it was never intended to convey citizenship on people who are in this country illegally and have a child, convey citizenship on that child, then why was it enforced that way from the beginning? Right? I mean, you go back and you look at the way when Congress was debating this amendment, nobody brought that argument up. At the time it was being ratified in the 19th century. So that's a modern interpretation of the text. And if conservatives are going to say that they're originalists, right, that we believe in interpreting the Constitution as written, then that's the way you have to interpret it, like it or not. Now, I can understand if you don't think it's a good idea to convey birthright citizenship on the children of illegal immigrants. I could buy into that argument. I'd be willing to listen to it. But that's not what the Constitution says at this moment. And a lot of times people will say, well, then what does that clause mean? Like, why was that clause put in there? Why was it in there subject to the jurisdiction thereof? Why is that in there if it doesn't mean that illegal immigrants' children aren't, you know, are citizens? Like, what does that mean? Well, what it means is what they're talking about are people like diplomats, right? Diplomats come here from other parts of the world, particularly in the 19th century when travel took a lot longer. Diplomats would literally live within our borders with their families for a long time. And so the Constitution made a carve out for them because diplomats have diplomatic immunity. They are not subject to the jurisdiction of our laws. They are subject to the jurisdictions of the countries that they represent, the countries that they're from. Also, people like foreign soldiers. Foreign soldiers are not on our soil, are not jurisdiction to our laws, obviously. They're under the jurisdiction of the laws of war and the laws of their country and the laws of the military that they're fighting for. They're not subject to our jurisdiction. That's what that carve-out was intended to talk about, were the families of diplomats, the families of people who are in our country but not citizens and not subject to our jurisdiction. Illegal immigrants are subject to our laws, which is why we arrest them all the time. I mean, I think it's an odd interpretation, Mike, for people who I think generally are probably in favor of illegal immigrants getting arrested, also arguing that somehow they are not subject to our jurisdiction. Because clearly they are. Clearly they are subject to our jurisdiction. And this is the way the 14th Amendment has been enforced since the 19th century. So to argue that somehow President Trump can undo this with an executive order is, I'm sorry, a fundamentally not conservative point of view. I get upset all the time when my friends on the left just want to ignore the parts of the Second Amendment that make it pretty clear that we all have a right to keep and bear arms. But yet somehow a lot of times they think that laws which prohibit concealed carry are somehow constitutional. Well, clearly they're not. You have a constitutional right to keep and bear arms. Our friends on the left don't get to just ignore that when it's inconvenient for the policy outcomes that they want to achieve. Well, the same thing goes for the right. The same thing goes for conservatives. You don't just get to ignore the original intent of the 14th Amendment. You don't get to just ignore the way the 14th Amendment has been enforced since the 19th century, well over 100 years. You just get to pretend that doesn't exist. Like it or not, the 14th Amendment is in our Constitution. It says what it says. Now, that being said, there is the other question. Should the children of illegal immigrants be conveyed citizenship automatically simply by being born here? And You know, honestly, I go back and forth on that question. On one hand, I believe very much in what Ronald Reagan said about the United States of America being a shining city on a hill. I mean, that's the ideal that I want to aspire to. When I think of people who are, you know, trying to beat down the door to get onto our country, that they're fleeing awful things in other parts of the world, and clearly they see something pretty wonderful in our country. And I'd like to think that the things that they see are wonderful in our country are things like the First Amendment and the Second Amendment and the Fourth Amendment. And I don't know how many people here immigrate here because we have a protection against not quartering troops, the Third Amendment, but you know what I'm saying, that they see something wonderful in our country where they're coming here. I think that's great. And so I don't want to lose that. But then on the other hand, I also don't want to just, you know, you're a citizen, you know, people use that cynically. So I can understand having that debate, but my position is President Trump cannot simply through an executive order undo the 14th Amendment. What do you think? 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. Rob Report 970, WDYM 93.1 FM, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDY.com. We had John on about our topic, the 14th Amendment issue, but he dropped off. John, if you want to call back in, we'll get you on. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. Mike, do you understand what I'm saying about the 14th? I don't think President Trump could just issue an executive order.
No, I agree with that. That's not going to be a way to get anything done. But unlike you, I don't disagree that the thought of making this change, however you have to do that, whatever the means are, isn't a terrible idea. I think
do you support birthright citizenship? I mean, as a broad concept, it means that my children, because I'm a U.S. citizen. My children born within our borders are automatically, that's birthright citizenship.
Correct.
Citizenship from birth. The question is conveying birthright citizenship to people who are in our borders but are not citizens.
Right. That's
you think
where,
that shouldn't be?
That's where there should, I think, be a change. And there's a couple of reasons I think about that. One, and I never thought of it this way, but this is interesting. I was in vacationing in Mexico, as I'm fortunate to be able to do quite often. And I was talking to a couple there, and there were a couple that she was a dentist and the husband is a doctor. And they live in a Mexican community about, I suppose, an hour south of Texas. And they have three kids. For all three children, Rob, they drove to the United States and had all three children in the United States so they would be dual citizens.
Yeah.
Okay? And look. That is, so, you know, that's the kind of, it isn't just illegals. You know, we think about the people coming from extreme poverty, but people do that as well. And I just don't think that just being born here, because look, and I talked about this morning, you know, if Republicans get knocked for having no plan on health care, because all they've talked about is health care. And then when the time comes, they have no plan. I would say the same about Democrats. Because Democrats say, well, no, I'm not. I want to do something about illegal immigration as well. Okay, well, what do you want to do? And there's never an answer, just like Republicans with health care. And at some point, you have to start deterring people from wanting to try. And I think, you know, and look,
well, I think that's a problem
for safety reasons, right?
And I think that's a problem at the border. I mean, if people feel like they can just bust through our border.
Exactly.
And then set up shop. And I mean, there's a lot of reasons.
The world changes, Rob. You have to think about these things.
You got to be concerned about like balkanization. You know, I'm concerned about creating a class of citizen who maybe doesn't share, you know what I mean? Like they're isolated by language barriers or whatever. I am pro-immigration, 100% pro-immigration. What I am against is having a loophole where people could cynically exploit our immigration laws and create, you know, not so good situations. I also think that citizenship has responsibilities along with benefits. And sometimes I think the people doing this are looking for the benefits maybe without the responsibilities. I think that bothers me as well. Let's see. Let's go to the phones. Caller, Tom, you're on. What's up?
Well, first of all, you're talking about Joel Heitkamp is supporting Heidi. And I'm going, well, you got Chris Berg, and you got you, and you got Jay Thomas, and you got all these right-wing talkers. And they're all supporting Kramer, so... You know,
we're also not related.
You're a slim brat.
We're also not as related as, to Kevin Kramer.
But as far as immigration goes, I mean, now Trump supports Ted Cruz. Now he's an anchor baby from Canada, so So there you go. He's supporting him. So there you
all
go.
Right.
You know,
Tom, Dad, thanks for the call, Tom. Appreciate it. I want to sneak in Bob here before the break, too. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi. I agree with the constitutional amendment. President Trump, even though I support him, should not be able to change the Constitution that way. It would have to go to the states and Congress and all that good stuff. So I don't think it'll ever happen. The second thing is the Democrats will never stand for it because their dream is to open borders and bring in everybody here and have voting base for them forever.
Democrats, I don't even know how accurate it is. If you look at some of the voting trends in Hispanic communities, for example, there's stronger Republican support there than I think a lot of Democrats want to credit. Their great dream is like enduring Democratic supermajorities built on the back of demographic shifts in our country, and they feel like open borders contributes to that demographic shift. I think they're a little overconfident. I think you get a couple of generations in, a lot of those Hispanic voters are Republicans, and not to mention, you know, other demographics as well. If illegal immigration was increasing, was politically advantageous to Republicans instead, you would see the positions on this switch. And I think I don't want positions on immigration that are driven by partisan politics. I don't care who they vote for. I just want sane immigration policies that are enforced. That's what I want. Thanks for the call, Bob. I got to go to a break. Rob Report, 970 WDYAM, 93.1 FM. We'll keep the show going right after this. Welcome back, Rob Report, 970 WDYAM, 93.1 FM. Just quick before we get to our guest about Measure 3 here, I keep hearing a lot of people, Mike, we were talking about the 14th Amendment question and birthright citizenship and President Trump's exact. A lot of people say, well, President Trump's just throwing mud against the wall before the midterms. This was brought out during an interview. He didn't know he was going to be asked about this. It wasn't like his administration made an announcement. If you read the transcript of the interview, he literally says, like, how did you guys know about that? Like, we've been talking about it, but we weren't planning on doing anything until after the midterm. So I don't think he can do anything with an executive order, but don't criticize him for trying to do something about the midterms. The press brought this out, which I'm not saying is wrong. I mean, their job is to report a story. But to say that this was calculated for the midterms, I don't think is accurate. Anyway, all right, we're going to keep moving on. Measure 3, obviously the recreational marijuana measure, the most debated measure in our state right now, hotly contested. Here to talk with me about it, Justin Luke Riley. Justin is with the Marijuana Accountability Coalition out of Colorado. Justin, how you doing?
I'm good, sir. How about yourself?
Pretty good. So we're coming down to the stretch. You're part of the campaign against Measure 3, telling people to vote no. Real quick, why shouldn't we pass this?
I think especially at a time like this, when whether our country is battling with an opioid crisis or also, you know, with the reality that things like alcohol still exist in every single community across the country, rushing through a decision and legalizing another drug is just one of the, I think, most short-sighted things that we could do to our communities at this time. When in states like Colorado, we're still seeing adverse reactions to the decisions that we've made to legalize in our state.
Yeah. Well, a number of things you said there. First of all, I don't feel like we've rushed.
Sure.
We've been having this debate for months. This ballot language, it's been around for a while. And we had a debate about medical marijuana last cycle. So we've been debating marijuana in North Dakota for a couple of years now. I don't think anything's being rushed. I keep hearing people talk about, you know, the adverse impacts or whatever of Colorado, and I fully acknowledge.
Sure.
I mean, we're transitioning from marijuana being this 100% prohibited product to it being legalized in states like Colorado to one degree or another. In most states in the union, I think all but four states now have either decriminalization or legalization to one degree or another. Just four states now still have a total ban. I fully expect that there's some turbulence associated with that as we transition from this drug coming out of the shadows into the light, and we're figuring out how it fits in our society. But if it's been so bad in Colorado, I mean, the question I can't get around is, why do states keep moving in this direction then?
Sure. I think it's because they keep up the momentum of some of the statements that you made, which are correct. You know, their idea of legalization is actually around things like decriminalization, which our organization is very much for, you know, or they're very much interested in the research and the medicinal value in marijuana, and those are also things that we're extraordinarily for. But the difference maker for us is when we talk about decriminalization, medicalization, those two components are drastically different from normalization and commercialization. And an example of that is having products like edibles that have almost no limits on THC potency. And those are the types of things that we throw up huge cautionary flags around. Not decrim, not research. Those two things are fine. But really having an entire new industry with, you know, no rules around marketing, no rules around THC potency, those are the things that make us
nervous.
We
could put those in place. I mean, we can't put in, I mean, the first step is legalization. And then we could put in place regulations on, you know, how much. I mean, we regulate stuff all the time. We regulate how much alcohol can be. States do that all the time. Utah, for instance, has very different than most states, has very different laws about, you know, alcohol content in beverages. States can do this. We can do this. But
then I would suggest doing it first, right? Wouldn't that be okay instead of waiting until after?
Yeah, but the our legislature can do it. I mean, if North Dakotans say that they want to legalize recreational marijuana, our legislature will be able to come back in January and begin the process of putting in place some of those regulations. We can have a debate about what's good and what's not, but we can have that debate starting in January. Nothing's stopping us.
Sure. Yeah, and I would just simply suggest, you know, start everything in January. Then no need to rush it now. If you're willing to, if people in North Dakota are willing to regulate, then legalize. You know, come up with kind of the perfect plan. If it's so good, then, you know, work through it and then do that next year.
Is there any sort of legalization that your organization would support?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Maybe I wasn't clear earlier when we talked about supporting the decriminalization efforts,
right?
Around,
see, but that's different.
And then research.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't want to interrupt, but decriminalization to me is different because, I mean, at that point, we're not saying it's legal to where I could just open up a store and sell it or whatever. We're just saying it's not necessarily criminal. I have a problem with that. And the reason why is I feel like we're undermining respect for the rule of law like that. I mean, if it's not illegal, then it should be legal. And this I feel like we're setting up this gray area where I don't know that it solves anything, right? I mean, if it's going to be legal, then let's just have it legal. I mean, that's honestly my problem with prohibition to this point is nobody. I mean, very few people are respecting this law. I mean, the only people respecting this law are the people who don't want to smoke marijuana to begin with and are just making that choice. People who want marijuana can buy marijuana. It's marijuana dealers are everywhere. It's ubiquitous. This law is being flouted all the time. It's making a joke out of law enforcement because they're fighting a losing battle against this. I don't want to, if we're going to do it, let's legalize it. I mean, does that make sense, Luke? Excuse me, Justin.
I mean,
I'm sorry.
No, either way. My folks call me Luke. You can call me Luke. I certainly understand your words and I understand your logic. And, you know, I just simply don't agree with it, you know?
Yeah. Well, okay. Why not, though? You know, I mean, why decriminalization but not legalization?
Excuse me. Because for us, the clear merits and values in decriminalization, there's zero benefit in penalizing individual users. We have no desire to see that continue. Some of those laws are, you know, they're futile at best. But there's a difference between decriminalization or even medicalization and making sure sick people get their medicine. Our organization, you know, was very excited when the cannabidiol went through the FDA process and is now an actual, you know, research-based FDA-approved drug that can help people that are not well. Those things are also great. But when we talk about when an entire industry, which is what we're talking about, we're not just talking about decrim, we're not just talking about medical research because those things are important. We're talking about when an entire industry decides to set up shops and products and promote the normalization of another fourth legal drug when thus far alcohol, tobacco, and pharmaceuticals have yet to solve any of our country's problems. We don't see it making a lot of sense that it would be different if alcohol, tobacco, and pharmaceuticals, for example, we had figured that out. When we had figured out how to regulate everything and everybody had all the tax dollars they needed to, or you look at Colorado specifically, you know, we still don't have a balanced budget. And so in creating a new industry to solve other problems has literally never worked. So before we begin down that road state to state, you know, let's just take a breath and slow down.
Okay, well, Justin, I'm a little in shock. I mean, it's why would we not? Nobody is saying that alcohol solves any problems. People just like alcohol because alcohol's fun. Used responsibly, alcohol's fun. Who doesn't like having a beer at the end of the day? Some people do. Some people, a lot of people, though, they like to have a beer while they're watching football. They like to tailgate outside an NDSU Bison game. They like to go to a Sioux game and drink a beer. These are things people like. I mean, it doesn't have to solve a problem. Alcohol doesn't solve any problem. Alcohol actually creates problems. But the thing is,
a law
prohibiting it doesn't work. We tried it. It doesn't work. I would argue marijuana prohibition. Doesn't work. People who want marijuana are getting marijuana anyway. We're spending a lot of money to try to stop it, and we're not stopping it. Because I can tell you, I if I really want, and I don't, I have no interest in smoking marijuana, but I'm pretty sure if I wanted to find some marijuana, I could finish this show and find some within an hour. I have
no
idea.
I'm sure you could do that with heroin or synthetics or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, except for marijuana's not heroin. Let's go to the phones. Ron from Fargo, you're on. What's up?
You know, I've struggled with this measure since it's hit the airwaves or, you know, and looking at it. One side of me is, even though I'm not promoting the use of marijuana, I agree with you, Rob, that we need to get it legal, not decriminalize it, legal, and then put some regulations in place concerning it. My fear, though, is that this measure, the way it's written, isn't going to allow for that. And that's what scares me. But, you know, I'm listening to your guest, and I'm a student of history, and I look at some of the most violent, corrupt times that we had was during the Prohibition era. It's the same thing right now on a grander scale with the cartels and the drugs and everything else that is taking place. To assume that you can make it legal through the legislature or whatever, as a nation, we need to decriminalize, we need to legalize marijuana, put some restrictions in places, like he said, for, you know, types of foods that it can be in, places where it can be sold, monitored.
It's just some standardization, right? Like this is the amount, you know, so that we could use this stuff safely. But, Ron, thanks for the call. Justin, I'm going to let you respond to Ron's points after the break, if you don't mind. We're going to go to a commercial break. This is the Rob Report, 970 WDOI AM 93.1 FM. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, Rob Report, 970 WDOI AM 93.1 FM. Talking about Measure 3 with Justin Luke Riley from the Marijuana Accountability Coalition. And Justin, I want to let you respond to the point Ron made, because I think the argument that you made was that legalizing alcohol didn't solve anything. And I think Ron makes the point that it did. I mean, we ended Prohibition for a reason. It created an enormous black market that was extremely lucrative for violent gangs, you know, like Al Capone. I mean, these people who are iconic in American history, they benefited greatly from the prohibition of alcohol. I think the argument is, you say that you're for decriminalization. I look at decriminalization. If we don't legalize, all decriminalization does is it leaves in place the black market while reducing the consequences for it. That troubles me, Justin. What's your response?
Again, I can appreciate the ideal sentiment that things like the black market would shrink if we were to legalize. But here in Colorado, we see not only an increase in the black market, but we also see an increase of distribution to minors. We also, you know, see a tremendous amount of marijuana going out of our state into other communities. We see pot sales being used as cover for other crimes. And I could go on and on. I don't want to read you necessarily the whole long list, but I am referring to one of the documents. We created a scorecard or kind of a report card for Amendment 64, which was the amendment in Colorado that promised to, you know, close the black market, to, you know, shrink the amount of people that are misusing substances that are underage. And right now, we're Colorado, that is, number one in the nation for first-time marijuana use among youth. And so those are not things. Go ahead.
But,
I don't want to interrupt.
I don't want to cut you off. But we're still in the early going, though, right? I mean, it's been five years
in Colorado.
Yeah. Okay. That's not that long. And also, I mean, we're, as an entire nation, it's not just Colorado that's going through this. As a nation, our laws regarding this drug are in transition. It doesn't surprise me that there's been some side effects and some headaches along the way. It doesn't surprise me that overnight, you know, the black market may have found some ways to thrive in the early going. I think those arguments are long term, though. I think long term, what we know doesn't work is prohibiting marijuana.
But I don't think North Dakota is interested in 5 years of a bigger black market, 5 years of more young people misusing substances, 5 years of a lack of THC potency.
We might be willing to sign up.
And it's not just an experiment that's happening safely in a lab. It's happening with children and communities, with parents and family members. It's two out of three of the drug arrests, a controlled experiment. Go ahead.
Roughly two out of three of the drug arrests in our state are related to marijuana. Now, I'm not saying that all of those arrests would go away, because a lot of times there's other related things, other related drugs or whatever. But we spend a lot of time arresting people in North Dakota, putting them in jail for nothing more than marijuana. I understand that
will only continue. If you follow in the footsteps of Colorado, you will see more black and brown kids and white kids arrested
for
marijuana
use in
your state.
But we're not necessarily. In fact, our policy would be probably the most permissive marijuana policy in the country. We wouldn't be following a marijuana in Colorado's footsteps. Our policy is very different. We may have a different experience.
I would just like to be interested to know.
Well, we don't. Well, for instance, our policy is just a straight up legalization. It doesn't necessarily. We leave by design. The Measure 3 supporters say they left the door open to the legislature to come in and put in place regulations about when this can be sold. I mean, there's very few regulations on it, unlike Colorado.
But I don't think they're legalizing it for minors. And the arrests that I'm speaking of specifically are for minors.
Okay.
For kids under 18, unless you're legalizing lower, and I'm really not sure.
Age 21 is Measure 3. Prohibits under age 21. But those numbers would still hold true then. Right. But also Colorado was one of the first through the door too. Right. I mean, one of the first in the nation. North Dakota wouldn't be. I mean, I feel like this is going to get easier as more states join this. And I think inevitably that's where we're heading as a country.
Mm. Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, my hope would be that, that we protect kids and have better regulations. And I think if it's still such a revolutionary idea, don't legalize and figure it out later. Figure it out. Look at the learning lessons. Have you done any cost reports? Have you looked at the true costs of what marijuana can do? Do you have things like treatment and recovery support services on demand ready just in case some people that will inevitably have more access to marijuana, if they do need help, will that help be available to them because of set-asides of tax revenues for treatment and recovery?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But I tell you, those are the challenges I'd like to take on. And my frustration is, again, existing policy isn't working. So I realize that there's let's try to scare people from trying something new because there'll be new problems. I fully acknowledge as a Measure 3 supporter, there's going to be some challenges that it brings about. I would rather face those challenges than continue having the problems that we have now stemming from marijuana prohibition, both in North Dakota and nationally. I would rather face those challenges as a state, as a society. That's the direction I think we ought to go. And I think the slower we go and the more we listen, frankly, to groups like yours, the more we're going to be stuck in a very terrible past. I'm curious, why are you so, I mean, I hear when I've had you and other folks opposing Measure 3, there's a lot of talk about the marijuana industry being so scared of these evil entrepreneurs and capitalists. You realize they're going to be displacing violent gangs. I feel like that's a plus. I mean, say what you want about corporate America.
But,
I would rather deal with them.
But cost-benefit analysis, right? So
cartels.
You look at, and arguably there are, of course, pros for everybody's argument. But I don't hear the industry talking about cons. And also, I could not be further, being afraid of capitalists or entrepreneurs is not at all who I am. But just for the record, go entrepreneurship. But when we talk about entrepreneurship in an industry that targets individuals, particularly that have a high propensity to misuse and become addicted to a substance. Yeah, not a fan.
All right. Well, Justin, I appreciate your time. You and I obviously don't agree, but I thank you for coming on and having the discussion.
Yeah, of course.
That's Justin Luke Riley. Yeah, absolutely. That's Justin Luke Riley from the Marijuana Accountability Coalition. This is Rob Port, 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM. We'll be back. Don't go away. Welcome back, Rob Port, 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. Let's see, Kyle, do we have our guest?
We sure do.
Oh, we do. All right, Mark Lauder, former advisor to President Donald Trump. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing doing pretty good. So I guess the big news today is this this thing about the 14th Amendment and birthright citizenship and everything. Now, I hear a lot of people saying that this was something the Trump administration announced for, like this was some announcement from the administration. I'm pretty sure this came up during an interview. The president didn't expect it to, but it came up during an interview where he was asked about it. They didn't announce it, but he was asked about it and said, yeah, you know, it's something we've been kicking around and probably we're going to maybe announce it after the election. I mean, am I right? I mean, I don't think that this was like a pre-election maneuver by the Trump
administration. Here, and it's been a long time since then. But if I remember, the president mentioned this idea also on the campaign trail during an immigration speech he gave, I believe it was in Phoenix. So this is not a new idea. In fact, this is not even a new concept. There have been bills that have floated by members of both parties that have offered legislation in the last 15, 20 years or so that would clarify what it is that the 14th Amendment is actually referencing. And I find it really interesting as I look at the mainstream media discussion about this, and they're like questioning the Constitution. You know, they're saying the president's questioning the Constitution. But if you actually go back and listen to the debate, and I actually read a transcript of it, obviously, from the 1860s, when the 14th Amendment was originally passed, the author of the amendment specifically said this has nothing to do with foreign nationals, aliens, and families of ambassadors and foreign governments who were sent here to work on behalf of the United States, that it did not convey citizenship to those based on birthright. So, you know, I think we're trying to misremember history in some respects with this discussion.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure. I mean, if that was true, then why wasn't this addressed in the 19th century then? I mean, it's been enforced this way since it was ratified.
Well, it's also it's never been ruled on by the Supreme Court. And right. And so that's one of the things that there has never been a test of it in this fashion. And again, if you are a legal immigrant and you are here, then you would still the birthright citizenship would still apply. But what the president is talking about is that if you come here illegally and have a child, then you should not that child should not automatically become a citizen of the United States, which then allows the parents to stay here illegally. And we actually do have a tourism industry where people in Europe and others travel here specifically to have a child so they can give birth here and have that citizenship.
My producer in the first segment, in the first hour of the show, actually, we was just on vacation in Mexico and spoke with a very affluent family, a doctor and his wife, who said they've had three children and they crossed the border each time because they wanted to get them dual citizenship. I honestly think that's a little cynical, and I agree with you, it should change. President Trump, though, was very critical of President Obama's use of executive orders, and I think that sticks in my craw a little bit. I'm not sure. I mean, we can have a debate about what the Constitution says or doesn't say or what it means. And obviously, as you said, the Supreme Court hasn't weighed in on that, and perhaps they should. But if we're going to amend the Constitution, then it's not something the president can just do with an executive order. I don't think conservatives could be critical of the use of executive orders to have the president go turn around and announce something like this.
Well, in one case, you might also, by signing this executive order, and trust me, and you and I both know, you know, the American Civil Liberals Union and their kinds of groups will sue the moment this thing ink hits the paper if the president goes forward with this. And that will then offer the opportunity for the Supreme Court to weigh in. I've also seen news today that Senator Lindsey Graham and others plan to offer a piece of legislation that would clarify what this actually applies to. So there's a number of ways that this can be approached. And I think while the president has not actually taken the step yet, he's discussed it. I think this is just one way, obviously, for us to clarify what it is. And that requires the Supreme Court, because whether it is a law that is passed by Congress or an executive order, it will make its way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will ultimately be the one to say what was the framers' intent, what does the 14th Amendment actually mean in respect to this issue.
Well, what impact then does this have on the midterms? I mean, because we've had a lot of talk about, you know, the caravan making its way north. You know, immigration has been a lot on people's minds in these last couple of weeks. Some more cynical types have said that's by design, and the Trump administration is trying to scare voters and scare them. But, you know, you could look at that from another perspective and also argue saying, well, we're also shining on the light on the fact that Congress has done really, frankly, nothing on immigration for a long time now. Our immigration laws, I think even people who might disagree with how you and I view illegal immigration, Mark, will acknowledge our immigration policies, our immigration, it's a mess. It's an absolute mess that Congress hasn't acted.
I agree with you 100%. It's also a mess that presidents of both parties have talked about needing to address for 15 to 20 years now, and Congress still hasn't done it, regardless of party. So we do need to get Congress and to get members who are willing to work together to come up with a solution. The president has offered to work with Democrats. He's offered multiple fig leaves or olive branches to see if he could get them to make a deal. They've chosen not to want to cooperate, and there are not 100% of Republicans who are fully on board with that solution. So it's going to take bipartisan action, and I think it's something you'll see addressed. But we have to deal with this because our laws represent a problem from 40 years ago and not the current problem that we face, especially on our southern border.
Well, and I think that issue plays well. And by the way, if you want to call in, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. I think that issue plays well here in North Dakota. Now, Congressman Kevin Cramer and Republicans have been hitting Senator Heitkamp very, very hard on her immigration stance. They've been saying that she, you know, has voted down legislation supporting sanctuary cities. Senator Heitkamp has tried to claim that she's, you know, boosted voted to boost border security. I think the problem is you look at her voting record, it's hard to know what she thinks. I look at it as a voting record of somebody who has wanted to be on both sides of this issue for political effect. And Mark, I think the problem with immigration is we have too many people like that in Washington who are trying to have it both ways on immigration and nothing gets done.
I couldn't agree more with you, Rob. And I think that's one of the reasons why the people of North Dakota, we're seeing it come up in other races in Montana and other places. And I think that's why a lot of these politicians who've been there for a while, who've been members of the resistance, are really getting pushed back on by their voters because they want to see action. One of the reasons why President Trump was elected in the first place was because he told you like it was, whether you wanted to hear it or not. And then he went out and he did things. He didn't just say, I'm going to address NAFTA like every president has going back for 20 years. He actually said it and then did it. Every president going back to Clinton said they were going to move the embassy in Israel to Jerusalem. They all said it. None of them had the courage to do it. President said, I said it, I'm going to do it. And he'll do that with these things, but we've got to have more politicians like him who will actually put the politics aside, just get the work done.
Matt from Bismarck. Go ahead, Matt. What's up?
Hey, say, in the context of this discussion about the 14th Amendment, I keep hearing that it hasn't been reviewed, but the court in March of 1898 in the U.S. versus Wong, I thought they reviewed that in a 6-2 decision, affirmed birthright citizenship. Is there a reason why that Supreme Court review and decision hasn't really been discussed in the context of this new immigration debate with Trump's executive order?
Yeah, Mark, you said it hadn't been reviewed, Mark. I guess this is the first time I've heard of this case. What do you know the answer to that?
And I've seen it that according to what the White House is saying and folks there are saying, that, and maybe this aspect of it, I do know that there have been rulings on birthright citizenship, but does it directly, and I believe some of that was in relation to Native American populations. There were a couple of other cases that were also decided. But on the specific issue of whether it applies automatically to people who are entering our country illegally, that is a question that I don't believe has been addressed. the original author of the of that amendment, who also offered the law, in which a lot of people don't realize is that that section of the 14th Amendment, the 14th Amendment covers a lot of stuff, but that section of the 14th Amendment was really added because the Congress had already passed a law that they were afraid the Supreme Court was going to nullify. So by passing the 14th Amendment and adding that in there, they basically took that away from the Supreme Court. And so there's a lot of crossover here. It'd be great for legal scholars. I am not one. But I can tell you that they do believe that there is some justification in having the Supreme Court take a look at this.
Matt, does that answer your question?
That might be the distinction, because in the case of Wong, his parents were here legally. And then when they all left back to China, when he came back, and he had been born in the United States, when he tried to come back, they would not let him or his parents back. So that was where it was challenged on birthright, not necessarily. It was lacking that aspect of illegal entry in the first place.
Yeah, and I think that's what Mark was referring to as what hadn't been tested yet at the Supreme Court. Matt, thanks for the call. Mark, we're out of time. I appreciate it, though.
Always good to talk to you, Rob.
That's Mark Lauder. This is the Rob Report, 970 WDYAM, 93.1 FM. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back, Rob Report, 970 WDYAM, 93.1 FM. I'm talking more about this immigration situation. Joe emails, he goes, Rob, regarding immigration, Australia has been letting in 5% or more of their population in skills-based legal immigrants every year for over a decade now. The most immigrants by population in the world. They are also the only country in the world to not have a recession in 18 years now. The reason for that is growth due to these working immigrants. I have a problem when people start attributing, you know, economies are vastly complex and there's a lot of variables in it. I think it's probably a mistake to attribute Australia's strong economy to the extent, and I don't know anything about Australia's economy, but I would be very careful about ever attributing something like that to one factor. As for immigrant, my problem with skills-based legal immigrants is that's not what I aspire to. I don't necessarily, if somebody wants to come to the United States of America, is a special, wonderful place. And if somebody wants to come here and become a citizen and enjoy and share in our prosperity, I don't think they necessarily need to have a special skill. Right? I mean, that's not how my family that came here from Norway and Germany, they didn't have necessarily special skills. Right? They came here and they farmed. That's what they did. And they came in during, you know, at the turn of the last century was around the time that my family came to the United States of America. And, you know, they didn't have special skills. So I don't know that I want to, philosophically, morally, I don't know that you know, having a skills-based immigration system is necessarily what I want. Another emailer says, the lib stance that we are all from immigrants. Yes, correct. The difference is that they all came here to be American U.S. citizens, to support and defend the U.S., how many of the immigrants, such as the caravan coming now, support the United States, let alone would they defend this country for anything? As far as birthright citizenship, I believe that was intended to apply to children born here, to people who are here legally, not just because they managed to sneak in. It certainly shouldn't give the parents of a U.S.-born child an automatic free pass to stay here because their child is a U.S. citizen. Here's the thing with the first of all, there are illegal immigrants who have served our country and defended our country. I think there are people who came here illegally that truly love our country and for one reason or another didn't go through the citizenship process, which is part of the reason why I think the citizenship process ought to be easier. In fact, I think we have a program. I don't want to be wrong about this. I think we've even had a program in the past where people who served in the military, maybe they were the children of illegal immigrants, but you serve in the military and they got citizenship status by serving in the military. I know there's been that program in the past. I don't know if it's still around or not. But my larger point is, for people on the right, I don't think we should be so afraid of immigration. I think there's a lot of people on the right who are just, they're afraid of immigration. They're afraid of competition for the jobs. I don't think we have anything to be afraid of. America, North America, even before the founding of our country, but since the founding of our country as well, has seen wave after wave of immigration. We have been enriched by it. That's why this part of the world is one of the best places in the world to live. That's why so many people are knocking down our door to get in. But our friends on the left, we do have to have some sort of a process. I think it could be a lot easier, but we do have to have some sort of a process. That's the middle ground that we have to find. Anyway, I'm out of time. Jay Thomas Show straight ahead. You're going to want to stay tuned for that. You can always catch me here 12 to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday on 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at sayanythingblog.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again.